This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Yay, air conditioning. Although, it's not that bad out. In fact, it was warm when I was coming in to see my dad. Lovely warm. The sun was beaming down. It was lovely warm. And we've clouded up now because it looks like we're going to have a little bit of a rainstorm coming in. But we need the rain, and that's good. And so that cooled it off instantly once the clouds moved in. It's a good day. It's a good day. It's been a good week. All is well. Everything seems to be pottering along at work. We're getting things done. There's still a ton to do, but step at a time. Step at a time. Step at a time. Just keep moving forward as best we can. It's interesting, there were some assignments that have moved around at work because we've got people who are moving towards retirement, and so we've got those plans in place and trying to make sure that we're prepared and that, you know, people are up to speed, and so that's going to be an adventure. So we've got one guy who's been there, I don't know, 3 decades, maybe longer than that. Done great work, and he's going to be moving on here in 2021, so he's basically staring down 2.5 years, 3 years, so there's time to kind of get someone cut over, and so that happened this week. You know, some new assignments were handed out. As soon as he gets his plate cleared, then he's going to be coming along beside, and, you know, step at a time. It's really interesting. The writing's going fine. We've had the grandkids. I say we. My wife has had the grandkids. I have helped a little bit, but not a huge amount. My wife has had the grandkids this week, and they've had VBS, and so that's been exciting. And kind of impressed upon me again how just truly blessed my wife and I are. Got just lovely grandkids, but we have people in our church who, for one reason or another, as grandparents, have become the primary parents, and certainly they serve with distinction and love and kindness, but your entire life changes in those type of situations, and there would be no question that if something would happen, you know, we obviously would take care of our grandchildren. We would, but life would just change. You know, I don't think there's any question I would just have to pack up the writing for 10 years or so. And, or at least until they got into their, you know, early teens and could fend for themselves on a number of different issues. But, you know, It's been lovely to have them. It's been lovely to have them at the house. But it's just a different schedule when they're there. And I looked at my wife the other day, and she just kind of looked at me and smiled. And I knew exactly what she was saying, you know. She was tired. She had been running, taking them there, getting things done. So impressed me again at how blessed we are with where we are in our lives and the time we have to do the things that we want to do, and life is good. So with having the grandkids there, I'm actually only 500 words down, due in large part to the fact that I've just got to let my wife take it and take care of the grandkids. And I'm on chapter 21, and I usually go to about 30 chapters, so starting to head into the home stretch. I still have some things that I'm not really sure how we're going to work this out or what the scenes look like, but you know what? It's okay. Step at a time. We're doing okay. This will be interesting to see how this all works out. And I have, this is what, the second week of July, so I have, yeah, five weeks, 6 weeks, left, which is 60,000 words, and I'm at 100,000, so the book really should not go to 160,000, and so, actually, I'm at 106,000, somewhere in there, so I'm good, everything's good, we're buttering along. I've been thinking about this parable of the leaven some more, and I have to do some more research, but there might be some interesting things there. I've got to see how many places Jesus speaks disparagingly about the leaven. Because I know he uses it to refer to what the Pharisees are doing and that kind of stuff. And then there's this interesting parable where he says the kingdom of God is like a woman making bread. And she puts in a little leaven, and soon the leaven spreads through the whole loaf. And so I've got to look for some other interpretations, because the easy, quick interpretation is that, well, the kingdom of heaven is like the leaven, because that's spreading through the whole loaf and then it rises. And I need to look at it again, because I think it may say the kingdom of heaven is like a woman making bread. And if that's the case, Jesus may be referring to something else in there that I can use. It's always interesting to me when I'm talking about these parables in the book, because pretty much always there is an interpretation that is either ignored or not talked about, or something that I can twist and spin a little bit. That's the great thing about parables. You can twist them any way you want to. So, yeah. This week I did have some notes prepared last week, but I wanted to kind of get my foundational pieces in as to how I look at reality. And one of the things that struck me, and I'm not sure I mentioned it last week because I can't remember when it struck me, is when I was talking about the foundational setups and that you have to factor free will. That in fact free will, in my opinion, is the source of evil in the world. We've got this flesh, and then we choose. Well, free will allowed us to choose and to turn our backs on God. That gave rise to the flesh. And then our free will is respected, and you can point to the true evil in the world, and you can see it's all driven by humans, by decisions that humans are making. And not just, and this was the additional thought, not just the decisions that humans are making on an individual basis, but our corporate decisions as well, our group decisions. Because, for instance, in a country like America, we have enough resources to solve the problem of poverty in America. Now, you may not like the solution, you may not think that the welfare state is the solution, but maybe job training is, maybe social services to help, psychological services, counseling, counselors, you know, there's all kinds of things that money can do, resources to put into people's hands who are really interested in getting ahead. There's all kinds of ways if you were applying resources. And you know, frankly, the decision that we make to fight the drug war, to spend this billions of dollars trying to restrict people from using drugs, is that really the best use of our money? Or would it be better to just legalize everything and then have really good counseling programs and guidance programs and treat people who are addicts more as people who are sick, not people who are depraved? I mean, there's all kinds of decisions that we could make as a group, but we've chosen to take a fairly hard-line, judgmental approach to a lot of things in this country. We've chosen that as a country by whom we elect. That's free will as well. And the other place that makes things interesting for free will is in the whole breeding issue. Who gets to breed? Who gets to make babies? Because whatever qualities those people have, those are being selected into the reproductive stream. And so you get more of those type of people. And so as we move along in civilization, we can look back and we can see that there was a certain cultural mindset because of scarcity of resources. There was a tribalism. And that tribalism, as a group, that tribe is just making decisions. And then as we move on, you know, we have more nationalism. And as we move on, there are more decisions made towards seeing others as ourselves and treating others as ourselves. And all of these things are human decisions. And sometimes it's not just the decisions we make with our free will, but it's the collective decisions that we make that make a difference in the world. And so when we look around and we say, oh, there's evil in the world, you know, by pointing at God, what we're really doing is taking the focus off of us and the things that we have in our capability to do right now. But of course, God respects that free will. And so the outgrowths of that free will, he allows them to happen because it is free will. So that's interesting. Anyways, the notes that I prepared for last week was a little article I had come across called Five Ways to Quiet the Negative Voices in Your Head by Mark Chernoff. And of course, when I saw negative voices in your head, I was like, well, and there's the flesh. And there has been quite a bit of chatter and conversation that I've noticed, both people espousing meditation and, you know, people espousing the reduction of ego. There does seem to be a conversation we're having in this country about the mental life and the interior life and what you can do for that. So I thought there was some interesting stuff in this article. It starts off with him saying to a woman, he says, okay, so there's a beautiful, brilliant, priceless piece of art hanging right in front of you. It's sophisticated and meticulously detailed. In essence, it's beautiful. And yet you choose to fixate your eyes on the tiny dark housefly that has landed on the edge of this masterpiece. Why would you do this? Said the woman he was talking to, cracked a half smile in his direction and then shifted her gaze to the ground. And he said, I followed on saying, look, the point here is that there's no possible way to be 100% certain about anything in this life. Life is like great art. It's sophisticated, complex, and predictable. So you're left with a choice. Either appreciate it and look at the beauty that it holds, or focus on the worst and dwell on it. And of course, she gave the standard response. Well, no one lives like that. People die slowly every day. Wait. No, she said, well, if you expect the worst, you'll never be disappointed. And so he's talking about that. He's talking about people say that all the time, but believing in negative thoughts and acting on them is the single greatest barrier to living a healthy, productive life. If you allow these thoughts to dwell for too long, they will succeed in robbing you of peace and joy and productivity and meaning and ultimately your life. This is what we were talking about last week. What he's talking about here will work. You can do this without Jesus because, well, you can't really do anything without Jesus because he's holding everything together. But Jesus will love it if you do this. If you quiet down the negative voices in your life, because he's underneath and he's whispering. And the more you quiet down those voices, the more you hear him calling, love, kindness, mercy, grace, calling to you. And so Jesus is just fine with these type of articles. He doesn't care that they don't mention him, because the Holy Spirit is at work providing solutions. Anyways, he goes on to talk about quieting the negative thoughts within. He said, people who are habitual negative thinkers are often proud to describe themselves as realists. Of course, anyone who holds a strong belief thinks they are being realistic by holding it, whether it involves alien encounters, perfectly truthful politicians, or otherwise. The being realistic pronouncement is a favorite among cynics everywhere, and in a way they are correct. but only because negative thinking causes the human mind to give up on everything, not even to try or to give a disorganized, half-hearted effort. So the negativity itself influences the end result. Self-fulfilling predictions like this really do happen, and I testify, I have seen this. You know, when people are convinced that they can't do something, most of the time they can't. One moment. I'm getting my mail. What is that? I don't know. And it's really a shame because, you know, you spend some time with some of these people and you realize that, you know, okay, they're, you know, oh, that's my new case for my computer. That's what that is. Yay. I busted the zipper on my computer because I abused it. And so I've gotten another one, hopefully better case, because the first case only cost me $8. And it did survive for, I don't know, about 5-6 months. So that's not too bad, but I busted the zipper on it. Anyways, so you can be self-fulfilling. And the other thing is thinking negatively, expecting the worst, seeing the downside of positive situations, and even downright expecting failure, all convey a kind of backwards thinking. It's an emotional insurance policy. It happens subconsciously. It goes something like, if I expect a catastrophe, then I won't be as disappointed when it takes place. And he says that the alarming fact is that it means that negative thoughts can plague us even when life is going relatively well. And that's really true. For instance, the thought, "This is much too good to last," quietly wreaks havoc on a positive mental situation. Thus, the methods discussed below have to do with how negative thinking distorts our perceptions. Okay, so he says, here's some methods. He said, first of all, watch your tendency to overgeneralize the negative and minimize the positive. Okay, right. So I've kind of talked about this already. He said, ask yourself, if something negative unexpectedly happens, do I overgeneralize it? Do I view it as applying to everything and being permanent rather than compartmentalizing it to one place and time? He said, for instance, if someone rejects you or turns you down for a date, do you spread the negativity beyond that person and tell yourself, I'm just not good at relationships and they never work out for me? Okay, which is a lie. We've talked about this. It's a lie. That's a lie. Don't listen to the flesh telling you that, because that's a lie. Said, so you don't want to overgeneralize when something bad happens to you. You want to start focus. This is number two. You want to start focusing on the gray area between life extremes. Anytime something goes wrong, like this morning, the internet was out this morning. So I was like, I'm going to have to get over there. That router is going to be, And then I think, I haven't checked yet, but I think the internet popped back on about 9 o'clock this morning. And I was so happy. I was so happy. Because I can check from my phone to see whether the Rock House has internet. I was so happy. I was like, yay, the internet's back. In fact, I should probably check as I'm finishing up talking. And so as we're going along in life, honestly, a lot of the time in life, what we find is that those things that we're concerned about, you know, when we're like, oh, that's not going to happen. No, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be bad, and this is going to be awful, and this is going to be terrible, and blah, 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 blah. It usually doesn't, hey, the internet's on, boom. It usually doesn't work out that bad. Sometimes we think, oh, and it's going to be glorious and everyone will love me and I'll make $1 million. Well, it usually doesn't work out that good either, if that's good. So he's saying, you know, you should focus on the gray areas and say, look, you know, he says, since 99.9% of all situations in life are less than perfect, all or nothing thinking tends to make us focus on negative, the drama, the failures, the worst case. But understand that, okay, there might be some stuff that you might endure, but you know what? You're going to get through it. It's going to be fine. Number three, this is the third one. Stop looking for negative signs from others. Don't jump to conclusions. You know, I just had a situation where there's a young man. I wanted to get together with him again. We had had a really nice lunch together, and I wanted to get together with him again, so I texted him. He's usually very responsive. I texted him, and then I didn't hear anything, didn't hear anything, because the flesh is gone. Oh, yeah, well, he just doesn't want to get together with you anymore. And, oh, yeah, he's gone now. You missed your chance. You know, and I just kept thinking, no, that's not right. You know, he's busy. He's off somewhere. It's fine. And sure enough, you know, as I was getting ready to record the podcast and stuff, he had texted me and said, hey, sorry for the delay. And yeah, let's get together if we can. You know, so we're setting up a time. We're going to get together. But a lot of times we just go on. We forget that we had that, you know, negative thing when something happens, or what are they thinking about me? And, oh, that was terrible. And oh, so, but, you know, just set that aside, because they're probably not even thinking about you, and probably it wasn't negative. And there's no point in just grinding on that negative emotion when it's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. It's a lie. And then he also talks about identifying the underlying triggers to your negative thinking. He said, for example, if you're sitting at your desk and you catch yourself ruminating about something negative, pause and write it down immediately. Get that raw thought out of your head onto paper, just a short sentence or two, i.e. something like, I'm not good enough for the job I'm applying for because I don't have enough experience. Again, be brief. And he said, then identify what triggered the thought. Said something like, I'm new to the industry and therefore I'm feeling out of my comfort zone. How I've talked to people about this is when you get one of those negative thoughts, I'm not good enough for the job I'm applying for because I don't have enough experience. You look at that. First of all, if you feel some weirdness coming up within you, some emotion, you look and you say, what lie is the flesh telling me right now? And then you can dig down to, I'm not good enough for the job I'm applying for because I don't have enough experience. But then you can dig down further and find out what the truth is. Okay, I'm new to the industry. Obviously, I'm going to be out of my comfort zone, but Jesus is going to help me. And if you can just step back, see, why am I having this emotion right now? What lie is the flesh telling me? And then what really is the truth in this situation? It's amazing. You can just compress those negative thoughts and you can just, you know, either. And then he talks about changing your mantra. You know, things like, I'm not good enough, or I have to be better at that. And changing that to, I will do my best today. When I had my meeting with the young couple who was getting married, he was concerned that he might not be, you know, doing well enough at his new job, and he was kind of fretting about it. And I just looked at him and I said, look, did the people that you work for tell you you're not doing a good enough job? And he said, well, no. I said, right. That's your flesh that is lying to you. It's lying to you. What you're going to do is you're going to go in every day. You're going to do the best job you can do. You're going to be honorable. You're going to be there on time. You're going to try to do what you can do to be of value to the company and to fulfill what they need you to do. And I said, I'm telling you right now, there's a shortage of quality workmanship in the world. And if you go in every day trying to do your best, trying to learn as much as you can, trying to perform at your capacity, everything's going to be fine. Period. So yeah, it was a good little article. It's a good little article. I liked it a lot. 5 Ways to Quiet the Negative Voices in Your Head by Mark Chernoff. Have a couple of really interesting articles coming up. I just bookmarked one today on emotion, and I think next week I'm going to be going through an article about why the principles of enlightenment are the reason that women wear high heels. So that should be fun. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.